You are listening to The Obscure Gentleman, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to pop culture and filtering it through the eyes and ears of the internet. I'm your host, Aaron A. Alvarez, and who might you be?
I am Alex Mitchell. I don't know what I was doing.
What the fuck?
A little sleepy right now. It's all good.
Was that supposed to be Wyatt Earp?
No, not at all. I don't know what that... No.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, you know what? Now that I think about it, it does kind of sound like that. No. No.
Was he skin that wiener back? Was it...
Skin that smokestack and suck it or whatever the hell he said.
Skin it back.
Skin it and jerk it. It's a weird scene. It's a weird scene. Anyways.
Yeah. Jesus. So it's Wednesday. We got a bit of a hodgepodgey trio,
yeah.
Whatever that means. No overall theme today.
All good. All good.
Yeah. We're still going to do Doctor Who. Don't worry about that. That's at the end of the episode.
Who?
But other than that, it's going to be a lot of surprises, a lot of weird things, a lot of stories, a lot of facts about life.
Yeah.
In general.
Take the good, take the bad.
Yeah, Joe. And all the other characters.
Yeah.
Tootie, Antonio Banderas.
Do your thing.
Back together again, eh? Let's play.
Gang bang! There was a firefight!
But I don't want to be a pirate!
What is the charge? Eating a meal? A succulent Chinese meal?
How can you snap?
This is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you.
You don't know what hard times are, Daddy.
Kiss my sweaty balls, you fat.
Oh, look. Rocks.
Game over.
You lose. Good day, sir.
No. No.
I've hinted at this for a while. And there's just so much that I could say about this. So I'm guessing this is going to be the first part, and eventually I'll do a follow up, because this man has so many quotes that are ridiculous and insane. These are John Byrne quotes.
Okay.
So John Byrne, very famous comic book artist from the late 70s through the 80s, and sort of on a downturn in the 90s, but in his height in the 80s he was fucking huge. Like, you can get no bigger than John Byrne at Marvel, and then even at DC. Famous for his lengthy Fantastic Four run for Superman, and most famous, though, for X-Men with Chris Claremont. So, John Byrne is a legend in the comic book industry. One of the most famous pencilers that ever existed. In the 90s, his star started to fall, mainly due to his mouth.
Really?
John Byrne is the prototypical loudmouth creator who talks shit on everyone.
Oh no.
He's the ideal of fanboy turned comic book creator. It's either John Byrne's way or the highway. He also has weird quirks that are kind of disturbing at times. He really likes pairing grown men with, like, 14-year-old to 12-year-old girls. In his comics. In general, he's a piece of work. He has his own form called John Byrne Robotics. And it's essentially a madhouse run by him, where he's...
When he bans people, does he say, "You just got burned"?
No. He's judge, jury, and executioner.
He's judge, Judy, and executioner.
John Byrne's a polarizing figure. He refuses to work for Marvel or DC now, so all he does now is commissions and really shitty Star Trek photo comics that have nothing but errors in them and a lot of people hate.
Nice.
Why
does he refuse to work for them?
For Marvel, it's because they canceled X-Men The Hidden Years. That was canceled way, way back when. And then for DC, it was over something stupid. He hates reboots, but he thinks that they should reboot back to the 70s. But he hates reboots. Always remember that.
Wasn't his Superman run one of the first ones after...
He's a man who... It's only okay if he does it.
Okay.
He's always been like this. He thinks you should always stick to continuity. Never, ever do anything to change continuity, except he does it all the time.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's the sort of figure. So today what I'm going to do is I'm not going to really be telling stories about him. I'm going to be just, because there are a shitload of stories about him, and eventually there will be an episode which is dedicated to John Byrne stories.
Okay.
Today is just John Byrne quotes. On certain subjects. So,
give me the subject and the quote.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Okay.
Now, I should preface this by saying a lot of these quotes, John Byrne has tried to see to it that no one sees them. And by that, I mean...
he's trying to hide history, essentially.
Yeah, he will go on Wikiquote and request for them to be removed. He will go on his forum, edit his own quotes. He will send cease and desists to random people.
So we may get one eventually, if he finds out about this.
Maybe. Cool. No, I don't think so. That'd be hilarious if that happened.
I would love that.
John Byrne, I love your artwork, but goddamn, are you a piece of shit of a person.
Wow.
And
That's setting me up, then.
John Byrne, let's start this off with John Byrne on the subject of pedophilia.
Oh, no.
So, he said this on his forum. All these are pretty much from his forum, by the way.
Okay.
Pedophiles are almost certainly born that way. Again, we go to evolutionary conditioning, seek the youngest, strongest, most healthy for breeding purposes. A sure as it gets way to guarantee the survival of your genes. Pedophilia also brings along a big heaping helping of learned responses. However, in a society like ours, where normal sex is considered by many to be filthy and disgusting, abnormal sex, of course, is even more so. Abnormal in this case meaning anything, even simple physical attraction that is not age-appropriate. Heterosexual and strictly for procreation, preferably missionary position. Thus... Jesus. Any confused individual who finds himself attracted to young girls is likely to find himself attracted to increasingly younger girls as part of this pattern of self-loathing. So much emotional torment in victims and victimizers would surely be set aside if our society was sexually liberated enough to be able to say, sure, it's okay to be attracted to 11-year-olds.
Okay. First off, let me just say, he's right when it comes to society being sexually a bit conservative and all that,
as far as the United States.
And yes, and even then,
it's kind of changed.
Yeah, and that is all. Everything else after that is a bizarre, weird tangent about fucking, like, children, and I don't understand what he's talking about.
No, he says, you can be attracted to them. No. Look. No.
Yeah, there's not much I need to say on this.
That sets you up for his mentality and why he has...
Okay, so right off the bat, because I know jack shit about him. I read some of his books that he's worked on. I know jack shit about the man in total.
Yeah, this is the man who thought it was smart to have Reed Richards' first encounter and his first time... So, Reed Richards falls in love with Sue Storm the first time he sees her.
Okay.
This is the man who thought it was important to retcon that to be the first time he sees her, she's only 12 years old.
Okay.
And Reed is in his mid-20s.
And that's what makes it weird, because in a movie where likely they would be the same age, that'd be just adorable,
You have defenders saying, like, well, you know, it was just a childhood crush... And Reed, you know,
a childhood crush would be her liking him.
No, because she did like him.
Okay, and that's fine.
And saying, you know, Reed was just being flustered because it's like, you know, it's like kind of embarrassing. They say this, but then here's the kicker to this.
Okay,
he was also writing a thing solo series at the same time, where there was a flashback to Reed and the Thing and Ben Grimm in high school, mm-hmm. In college, and Ben wants them to go on a double date, and he asks Reed, hey, you want to go out with us? And Reed says, I don't know if I can go. And Ben makes fun of him and says, like, oh, I know why you can't go. And he's teasing him. And the girl's like, ooh, why doesn't he want to go with us? And he says, oh, because he's got a sweetheart back home. A little girl! Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Recently, Marvel retconned that, and they even addressed it in their lettering pages. This is when Matt Fraction was writing.
Mm-hmm.
Completely retconned. He did not meet her now when she was a little girl.
Okay.
So that's done with. So just to set up, this is the mind of John Byrne. Okay, so.
Sweet.
On mature comic books, I repeat, bullshit. Pull your head out of your ass for a moment and look at this, not as a longtime comic book reader, but as a civilian. This looks like a comic book, feels like a comic book, smells like a comic book, tastes like a comic book.
What?
No uninitiated person is going to look at this and think, ah, this lurid cover illustration indicates this book must be intended for mature readers. They are going to think, look at what they are selling to my children. And all the children are going to think, cool. Yeah, John Byrne doesn't think adults should read comics. And he doesn't think we should have adult material in comics.
I understand there's that... There's a divide with people saying, like, oh, I want kids to be able to read comics. And there's something wrong with that.
Yeah.
There are comics for kids, and there are comics for adults.
Comics are clearly rated. And his other issue... It's so weird to me is he thinks that normal people do not look at comics as just... They just still look at them as just kid stuff. The problem is... Things have kind of changed.
I'm not trying to be an asshole about this. Look at the people who are buying comics.
And when people talk about comics now, there's now this new sort of mindset where it's like, well, I've heard comics kind of tell like important stories at times.
Yeah.
The notion of the 1960s and 70s when like comics are kids crap.
Yeah.
That's kind of gone now. But John Byrne is clinging to that, and he believes that comics should never tell adult stories, even though a lot of his stories have to deal with like children and young and grown men.
Children, yeah.
And there you go. Or Superman shooting a porn with Big Bardo. I love his Superman run, but that's the scar of his run. But yeah, so
Jesus.
Yeah, so he hates any mature comics unless he's writing them, because he does.
Okay.
You know, it's okay if he does it because he knows how to do it. So John Byrne on the subject of Latinas.
Oh no. Okay, so let me just preface that both you and I are Chicano.
Yes, yeah. we're Latinos.
Yeah. And you do have a lot of friends who are also.
Yes.
So it's kind of a... Okay, yeah.
So here's John Byrne on the subject of Latinas. Hispanic and Latino women with blonde hair look like hookers to me. No matter how clean or cute they are, somehow those skin tones that look so good with dark, dark hair just don't work for me with lighter shades.
Yeah.
There's more quotes about this. I didn't write them down, but there are more quotes by him talking about how if you're a Latina and you have blonde hair, you're a hooker or a whore.
I don't think I personally know any Latinas with blonde hair, but that should have nothing to do with that. That's just a ridiculous statement.
I've seen a few, but it's
it's a hairstyle.
Yeah,
it's
not even and if you go back to a lot of his work in the 80s, certain characters on the street who dressed very provocatively, if they had brown skin, they usually had blonde hair.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's going by his own admission then, not really by...
No, he believes this. Okay, yeah. That's okay, cool. So on...
Great.
Okay, so this one is weird, and I'm going to have to do some self-censoring.
Okay.
So, you know comic balloons, like word balloons?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're essential to comics.
When someone says, like, a comic bubble, do you get mad? It's just like...
No.
Yeah, comic bubble. It sounds interchangeable, right?
If you said comic bubble, I would have been like, yeah, okay.
It sounds interchangeable, right? Well, so this is John Byrne on the topic of comic balloons, which, okay, you'll see.
Yeah.
There are lots of people who call black people N-words.
Wow.
Are both terms right? You seem to have missed the rather important point that my response indicated roughly that the same percentage of fans and pros use the improper terms for various elements of what we do. But the percentage of people do not approach a balance. It is not that roughly half say balloon and half say bubble. It is some say bubble and that they are wrong. Now he continues. In point of fact, there are plenty of people who use the N-word because that is the word they use, not because they imagine it has any negative racial connotations. That's precisely why I chose the word as my illustration. So this is, people start saying like, John, what the fuck are you saying? This is on his forum. Then he goes on to say, ignorance is the key, but not on my part. There are many places in the country where people to this day use the N-word when referring to black people because that's the word they use. They don't think of it as a racial slur. They don't think about it at all. In fact, it simply is. So, by this point, by the way, he actually is saying the word.
Yeah, no, I figured that.
Yeah, so he goes on to say, this is not even considering black people themselves who use the word. We cannot surely imagine that it is used in that context as a racial slur. The N-word is, like so many others, a word with a complex etymology and an even more complex pattern of use. This was all because he thinks that people using the word bubble instead of balloon are full of shit.
That's very pedantic, and I don't see...
And to justify that...
He was calling people the N-word, essentially.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And saying that it should be fine to use it. It's... Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I actually don't know... I don't know what point he was trying to get across. Was that... Is it okay for those people to say the N-word because they don't know any better?
It's okay because it's...
So then it should be okay to say word bubble.
Because someone told him that the difference between balloon and bubble, it's just a word.
He seems more angry that people say word bubble over people saying the N-word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. So here's John Byrne's thoughts on The Onion.
Like... The published...
Yeah, the publication.
The satirical publication.
Yes.
Okay.
The Onion lost all credibility for me a while back when they did a story on the Hudson River cleanup GE was forced to do. As some of you may recall, one of my neighbors is a GE Veep, and he was directly in charge of this. So from him I found out all kinds of details the press did not bother to pass along to the public. Since The Onion apparently gets its info from other papers, the story was full of inaccuracies. What are they, Michael Moore? Anyway, I stopped reading The Onion from then on.
What a fucking idiot.
Okay, here's the funny thing. Tons of people pointed this out to him. All those comments were deleted, and you're not allowed to bring up The Onion on his site anymore. Yeah. The Onion is... By the way, whenever there is something broad-sweeping like this, he will ban it from the forum where you can't talk about it anymore.
Nice.
So, yeah, he thought The Onion was... He was reading The Onion for years thinking it was real news.
That's amazing. That is actually amazing.
Okay. This is John Byrne on Steve Irwin.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was between this or his Christopher Reeve comments, but the Christopher Reeve ones are just... They're too mean. And what I'm going to say right now, it sounds very mean, but the Christopher Reeve ones...
Okay.
I'll say one part of the Christopher Reeve one. He's not a hero. He's in hell.
Holy fuck.
That's all I'll say for
what
that.
The fuck is wrong with this guy?
So here's him on Steve Irwin. So this was from when Steve Irwin died. This was the thread, like, rest in peace, Steve Irwin. Yeah. Okay. Time for me to rain on this parade. I didn't know he had kids. Young kids. This alters the mix considerably. This makes him an asshole. Cops and firemen, to name but two, place their lives on the line every day to protect others. There was nothing Steve Irwin was doing that could not have done, as did, say, Dave Attenborough, without putting his life at risk. This takes this from tragedy to stupidity, and worse, irresponsibility. I am glad this asshole is dead. Sorry for his wife and kids, but relieved they are no further danger from his lunacy. This guy should have been taken out to the croc pen, have his kids taken from him, and been thrown in the deepest, darkest, dankest pit an Australian judicial system has to offer, preferably after being skinned alive. Asshole is too good a word.
Holy shit. That is literally... All the jokes that people have made... I've never been that fucking scathing that I've ever read.
Here's another thing. Steve Irwin was a huge wildlife preservationist.
Yeah.
He did a lot of shit for animals, and what he was doing with the stingrays was also doing a lot of shit for them.
Yeah.
It's not like he was just wrestling fucking crocodiles for fun.
Yeah, a lot of people have this weird and I do have to defend this guy, because to a lot of people our age, he was goofy and funny, but he was also like a kind of a hero.
He was Jack Hanna, but cooler. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, and even the people that love animals these days, they always cite him as like a person that kind of helped them get into this.
What he did for animal preservation, like, you can't deny the steps forward he took.
Yeah.
In animal preservation, and like, he saved so many countless animals.
And the thing that always pissed me off, and I know we're going on a tangent here, was when after he died, people were going out and trying, like, killing stingrays and shit. Yeah. That always pissed me off.
And that's the thing. It's like, John
Byrne. I feel like I'm not even getting to the point of John Byrne here, but he's just being an asshole. Like, and I know that Bindi and her mom, they're big on, like, animals.
And Bob. Don't forget Bob. Baby Bob.
No, it's I keep thinking you're making a joke.
No, but his name is Bob, yeah. It's like the Steve Irwin Foundation, all that stuff. They do amazing things to save the lives of animals all across the world.
Yeah.
What they've done for wildlife is fucking extraordinary, and his legacy is extraordinary.
Basically, what I'm saying is John Byrne is being an asshole to animals, essentially.
Yeah, okay, so...
For what purpose? Like, I don't know why he even said that.
Anytime someone dies, he has an opinion on it.
Why?
Because he does. And people tried, of course, telling him with that...
What we just said, essentially. Yeah.
And, of course, now you're not allowed to talk about Steve Irwin on that forum anymore.
Awesome.
So, to a fan / supporter who suggests he try to regain some of his status as a creator. So, the fan was... This was at a convention. The fan was basically saying, like, you know, it'd be cool if, like, you got back into, like, mainstream comics. The swing of things,
yeah.
Yeah, his response... John Byrne is tired of stepping up to the plate. John Byrne is tired of doing the right thing and getting fucked up the ass for his troubles. John Byrne is tired of being lied to. John Byrne is tired of you.
Holy shit. Did he say that? Like actually say that? Like, he's spoken?
Yes, he said that to a person.
So, third person guy, he actually said that shit.
John Byrne said that.
That's nuts.
John Byrne said it in third person, yeah.
That's crazy.
On the idea of comic fans utilizing the internet to interact and share their hobby with each other. So, this is what he thinks of forums and fans interacting with each other online. To think that the internet allowing fans to feel that they are not alone as readers plays to the clubhouse mentality that is a large part of which is what is wrong with comics today. When you have isolated fans reading the books on their own and not knowing or much caring if anybody else is, and that the prime reason for reading is enjoyment, it's all about the books themselves. It's not about getting together with fellow fans to dissect and deconstruct. There have been clubs before. The Mary Marvel Marching Society shamelessly stole its name from the Mary Marvel Marching Society. I was myself a member of the Supermen of America. What was the key to those, though, was that fans who belonged were not truly interconnected. There was a sense of being part of a greater whole, but the hobby itself remained largely solitary, which the history of the industry seems to teach was a good thing.
Does he lack self-awareness?
Oh, no. He clearly fucking does.
Is he not aware of what he's running?
Which leads to the next point. When asked if he had considered closing his forum since he was part of the internet fandom problem, Here's what he had to say. If you had paid any attention, instead of just scanning for places you could display your sparkling wit, you might have noticed that I use this forum in much the same way firemen use fire to fight fire, but since you ask, I can shut it down for you. So, John Byrne thinks that his forum is the one true bastion on the internet that is fighting all the other forums. And
to the people that aren't aware, firemen use fire to, like, burn down, like, forests that are essentially...
Yeah.
Like, it'll be out of control, but it's a controlled, like, fire.
He essentially thinks his forum, again, this goes along with his mentality, is it's okay if I do it because I'm doing it right.
Yeah. You know, and that is what he's saying.
His forum is essentially people just licking his ass constantly. That's really all it is. It's people, people are discussing.
I'm sorry.
Here's the amazing thing. Anytime someone does have an opinion of their own, as soon as John Byrne comes in and says his opinion, they change their opinions to his. Like, yeah, John, you know what? You make a really good point. I agree with you. I was a member for about 2 weeks. And it was just like, I posted like 3 times. It was just, man, you cannot speak there without, it's the ultimate hive mind.
What do people on there do? Like, what do they ask? Like,
oh, it's a normal comic book forum. the only thing is John Byrne interacts with people well, and he posts like a normal forum poster.
Yeah. So he's there a lot, essentially?
Oh, he's always there.
Oh, wow.
Like, there's tons of sub-forums. Like, there's a Doctor Who forum, a Star Trek forum, and having a Doctor Who or Star Trek discussion is pretty much impossible because it always comes down to him saying, no, I think that's wrong, and then everyone agrees. Like, and you can't, and if you decide to disagree with him, you essentially run the risk of being banned.
I don't know why this is bothering me so much, because it goes against everything I know about as like a person that used to go on forums or, you know.
Yeah, no, his place is horrible, and comic book professionals have historically gone on there and argued with him, and like he's banned them. He's banned so many, he's talked shit to so many comic book pros on there. So here's the last one. So this one was overheard by Mike Rowingo, sadly, who's no longer with us. Pretty big artist in the 90s.
It seems like all the cool dudes are, like, dying, and all the assholes, like, live forever.
Mike Rowingo, him and Mark Waid did a pretty fantastic run on the Fantastic Four. He did some Superman work.
Mark Waid's awesome.
But Mike Rowingo, this went on to be a kind of a funny piece that he actually ended up drawing. It was a quick sketch of John Byrne with a huge head, with this quote, a tribute to it. And the story is that he was actually at a convention, and he overheard Byrne saying this to someone. Mm-hmm. And so here's the quote. God damn it. When are these assholes going to realize that if I wanted their opinion, I will give it to them? And that kind of sums up John Byrne. Like, his opinions are what everyone else's opinions.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
He will not.
It took me like a second to actually like think, like, wait,
yeah,
what the fuck
if did he you wants listen? Your opinion, he'll give you your opinion. Yeah,
that is bizarre.
John Byrne sees himself as the be all end all of everything.
Because he feels like a troll half the time. All this shit you're telling me. I know he's not.
He's a crazy old man.
How old is he?
I think he's like in his late 70s now, or mid 70s.
That makes sense.
He kind of has always been like this, like, and when we eventually do our Byrne episode, which will focus on, like,
I'm excited.
See, these
now.
Are just quotes. When we actually do the later, whenever that is, could be next year, it's going to be more of like stories and sort of his rise in the industry.
Yeah.
But then all the weird shit that surrounded his rise, like, there's one moment where he met Steve Ditko, and it was fucking bizarre. Steve Ditko himself is a bizarre man, but Byrne out-bizarred him in a way where Byrne, like, almost cried because Steve Ditko's answer wasn't, like, and it shattered his image of Ditko. So, we'll get to that later. So, before we head into our Doctor Who thing, just one last thing. So, it occurred to me, and it's occurred to many people, that in the world of Star Wars, there are characters.
Yeah.
There are many characters that have names, even though they're not named on screen. Background characters that appear for less than a second. There is a magical website called Wikipedia that chronicles all these characters.
Which I must say is the cleverest, like, name for your wiki page you could ever give it.
So I decided to take a look at three characters.
Okay.
That either appear on screen briefly or aren't even that important. But what you will find out is on Wikipedia is that they take the concept of everyone is the hero of their own story very seriously.
Yes.
So, let's start this off with Cy Snoodles.
I know Cy Snoodles.
So, Cy Snoodles is the singer in the
in the Jabba's Palace.
Yeah.
The lit monster.
Yes.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Which they add a CGI scene to the later releases. Awesome. So here's an excerpt from their bio. So, what you thought was just a singer in a bar. Ooh, you were wrong. So Cy Snoodles was a female Paloic singer and was also the lead vocalist for the Max Rebo Band during the time of the Galactic Civil War. Snoodles and her associated acts were favorites of the Hutt crime families. During the Clone Wars, in her solo career days, Snoodles also acted as a part-time bounty hunter, being responsible for the assassination of Zero the Hutt, her former lover, or 10th after being hired by Jabba.
Let me just say that I knew this because I've been watching the Clone Wars.
Oh my god, is this actually from Clone Wars?
Yeah.
Wait, is Sai Snoodles in Clone Wars?
She's in like two episodes.
That's amazing! Oh, wow.
And there's one episode where she's clearly wasted coming out of a bar.
Why'd they have to give this character this backstory?
It was weird, like, because it kind of comes out of nowhere, like, as I saw that episode. I was like, oh,
okay. Okay, so...
Again, it's like, I didn't need that from this character.
Every character in Star Wars has a detailed background that you didn't really need to know, but... Okay, so this next one... okay, in the first Star Wars movie, there when the Death Star gets when the beam goes off, right? You see a dude's hand pull the lever back, right?
Yes.
It's just a dude.
Yeah.
Right?
Just an operator.
It's not just a dude. So, Ten Granite is his name.
Okay.
As the Death Star neared completion, Granite was transferred to the Super Laser Gunnery crew. Granite was initially thrilled with the new assignment, but as he familiarized himself with the new super weapon, he began to question whether any person was capable of wielding such power wisely. He rationalized his concerns with the mistaken belief that the Empire would not actually fire the weapon at full power on an inhabited planet, rather on uninhabited moons, planets, and other bodies. During the final months of construction, Granite and his crew trained on a simulator on the main firing control chamber, familiarizing themselves with the firing sequence and working to shorten the firing sequence as much as possible. As the ranking NCO on the Super Laser's gunnery crew, it fell to Granite to actually complete the firing sequence by pulling the firing lever. Okay, so
yeah.
That's where we get to him pull. Okay, so the first time he actually fired the weapon was against an old Lucra Hulk class battleship, Fortressa, that was being used by the Rebel Alliance. Even though the weapon was only at 4% power, it was more than enough to completely destroy the Rebel capital ship. Eventually, he grew such a dislike of this job that he started to wonder about other possibilities and stated that it was his dream to become a commander of a super-class super-class Star Destroyer. Here's the next part. In the Death Star's control room, Master Chief Gunnery Officer Ten Granite prepared to fire the Death Star's super laser. With the Death Star primed to fire, he hesitated, feeling the guilt of the destruction of Alderaan. He called to stand by as the others in the control room urged him to shoot.
So here's the awesome thing is I knew exactly where you were going with this, because I look up on TV tropes,
yeah.
and they give you different things like, oh, this is an awesome moment, this is a heartwarming or funny moment.
Yeah.
I look on Tearjerker for A New Hope, and they said it's like the destruction of the Death Star is one if you know about the backstory of this guy. And it's like, come on.
So him saying standby is actually him like,
no, I can't. Maybe they could destroy me, and I don't need to kill
him. I love this. He had dreams of being on a super class Star Destroyer. Just this dude pulled the lever in one movie.
God damn it.
Okay, and we finish this off with Will Roe Hood. You ever heard of Will Roe Hood?
No, not to my knowledge.
So, in Empire, when everyone's running around Cloud City, there's this black dude in like an orange jumpsuit,
mm-hmm.
who's carrying what looks like an ice cream maker. You see him for like a second, half of a second. He's just a guy running in the background. Well, this man's a fucking hero.
Oh, God.
Will Roe Hood was a human male miner who lived and worked on Cloud City, a floating station located above the gas giant Bespin. He worked for Aero Filter, a mining company sympathetic to the Alliance to restore the Republic, as the head of the department reasonable for dealing with the Rebel Alliance supplying discounted Tabana gas. Eventually, though, the Galactic Empire invaded and conquered the planet. In order to protect the rebellion context, Hood was responsible for the miner took Aero Filter's main computer's memory core, as it contained the encrypted information on Rebel contacts. After finding the nearest disposal unit, Hood dumped the entire core rather than risk it falling to the wrong hands. Thus, Will Roe Hood was able to save the Alliance interests Hood remained on Cloud City throughout the Imperial occupation, suffering imprisonment and torture, but revealing nothing. Eventually, he joined together with Tien Schuyler, a former Imperial Security Bureau agent disenfranchised with the Empire, who had defected transmitting information on Cloud City's Imperial-run defense systems. Utilizing the information, the Alliance was able to liberate the planet from the Empire's control. After the Rebels' victory, Hood decided to take it easy. So, the entire reason why Cloud City was safe and why they didn't know about all of the context of the Rebel Alliance was because of this man. He dumped the memory cores, he got tortured, and
then
he saved the day at the end, and he decided, you know what? And the other character, this Tien Schuyler, is another dude who's running in the background, and they both teamed up. And when Luke and all of them left and shit, and everyone left, he still made sure shit was fine.
These are the heroes of Star Wars.
This man is the real hero of Cloud City.
Yes. Lando is a shit. This guy is my guy.
This guy running around with like an ice cream maker in an orange jumpsuit. Oh,
God damn it. What I kind of hate about this is whenever they have like a kind of interesting Imperial character, it's always, oh no, he's actually a good guy though. He's defecting to the rebellion. They're always like disenfranchised, or and it's like, can't just someone be like a proud Imperial?
Of course not.
Star Wars, I love you, but you gotta calm down.
Yeah. So,
those Wikipedia pages are like 10 miles long.
Yeah, for characters that appear for less than 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, now is our time to, of course, discuss Doctor Who. We are joined by Travis Kennedy of Plane Zero fame.
Aren't all of you guys sick of me by now? You gotta be.
Sometimes you're in the field, though.
That's so true. Well, twice, at least.
With the mice and all that.
Yes.
And cornholes.
Yes.
And the cornholes.
The holes of corn.
So, this week's episode was Sleep No More. This is the first it might be the only standalone episode now, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
Ravens over Gamora is still a tie into Maisie Williams.
Not just that. Stephen Moffat said that he would kind of consider the last three episodes to be sort of a big story.
Oh, wow.
So Face the Raven could possibly be part of a three-parter.
So it's like a prologue to the...
yeah.
It could be standalone, but there's also things leading to... I mean,
Moffat says something like... He was being very...
Moffat-esque.
Yeah. So, but this week we saw Sleep No More, and it's a standalone episode. And it was a doozy. It scared a shitload of children across the UK. Like the reports and shit of and things parents have said on social media they're angry because a lot of children apparently at the end of the episode I saw comments of people saying the reactions their children had. Was their children were essentially crying and afraid they were going to die.
You mean like when the guy took his eye out?
Yeah.
He just changed to the...
So before we go, let's just set it up then. So to start off, it's almost a found footage style episode, which I didn't mind actually. I thought it was done in a way that was clever enough that it didn't bother me.
I don't know. I found footage is hit and miss for me.
Yeah.
I don't know if I need my Doctor Who to be found footage, though, honesty.
It doesn't need to be. I just think this episode, they did it in a way that made sense.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, tell me if this is true or not, because I read this bit of trivia online. This is the only Doctor Who episode to not actually have, an opening little title.
Oh my god, it didn't.
Yeah.
That's fucking nuts. I didn't even realize that.
And it's 50-year history. This is
that's actually true.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy because, you know, when I first saw it, I'm like, oh, are we actually going to get the intro?
And I didn't even realize that it wasn't there. Yeah. Okay, to set up the episode, though, you have this sort of team on a spaceship. What are they doing exactly?
They're trying to rescue the crew.
Yeah, they're a rescue team. By the way, We all drank a lot last night.
I
so.
Didn't. No, I so, did
oh,
not.
Oh, except you.
Which is weird. Normally,
I didn't. I'm fine. Guys, I don't know what you're talking about.
Normally, I'm the drinker.
So if we sound, or if Travis and I, or mainly me, sound a little off, it's because of that. So, yeah, they're boarding the ship to find out what the fuck's going on and set a rescue mission. And there's, like, no one there. And then they start hearing people talking, and it's the Doctor and Clara.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, what the fuck is this shit?
That normally would have been where the intro would start, I think.
Yeah. So then the Doctor and Clara and this crew, along with one of the soldiers, is like a synthetic life form.
Yes.
He's a clone made to fight on the battlefield and shit. They're going around the ship trying to find out what's going on. They come in contact with these, like, sleeping pods called
Morpheus
Chambers,
yeah,
pods or whatever, that play
Enter Sandman.
No,
as every
Mr. Sandman, yes. And it turns out what these things are is in the future, in the 32nd century, they have the ability to cancel out your need for sleep. You stay in them for a while, and they just suck your sleep out. And you can be rejuvenated for like up to a month.
Like, you can go a whole month without actually having to sleep.
As a guy that enjoyed his sleep last night, that sounds horrific to me.
It does. On so many levels, like the idea of not getting to sleep. Don't get me wrong, there are times where I'm like, why do I need to sleep? Because I feel like I've got too much. Like right now, I'm playing Fallout 4. I would rather not ever have to sleep because then I can actually play the game.
But let's be honest, there are times when it's like there's so many hours in the day that you're just doing jack shit. Why would you want to be up right now?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just want to...
No, but sleep? See, on a regular work day, like right now, like I said, I just got Fallout 4, and I've maybe played it for a total of 5 hours.
Okay.
Since, like, Tuesday, in like 6 days.
It's like a 400-hour game.
Yeah, it's at least 100. 100-plus, probably.
That's a lot.
Depending on how you play. Anyways, so the idea of... That's the only time where I would want to not have to sleep. But for the most part, I enjoy it.
Yeah, sleep is fun.
Sleep is really fun.
Yeah, so they're like, oh, okay, this is what these things are for. And they find out they find the scientist who invented them inside of one of the pods after Clara got sucked into one and, like, was given, like, the Morpheus sleep for only, like, 5 minutes.
I feel like they got her out a lot quicker than that.
Yeah. They pulled her out and they're questioning the scientist and he's, like, being, like, all, like, oh, it wasn't my fault, blah, 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 all this bullshit. There's these giant monster things that are kind of hunting everyone down, and they're really scary looking.
They look like they're made out of, like, the stuff they put in your, like, ceiling to kind of, like...
Stucco?
No, the insular, like...
Insulation.
Yeah, they look like that.
Kind of, they got big giant mouths. Yeah, and they're pretty scary, and they're, like, trying to kill everyone, but then you find out what they are. And so the crust that it grows in the side of your eye when you sleep...
stuff that I actually haven't completely gotten
yet.
I'm really tired.
They're that become sentient. They're like, because of the hyper-accelerated sleep thing, it's like they've become sentient on the ship and shit and trying to kill people. But then you find out more shit about them and how they can't hear, so you're quieter on them and you're going to die. I don't feel good. Anyone want to fill in?
Fill
in the story.
So they're finding out more about it, and then it turns out the scientist guy is like one of the only surviving dudes there for a good reason because he's orchestrating this whole.
Because he said thing. They're talking to him.
Yeah, and he thinks that I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on that kind of doesn't really. That didn't resonate with me at all.
No, it made sense to me completely.
No, good for you. I just didn't care.
You know what? If we're gonna jump to opinions of this, like I had a hard time keep paying attention to this
episode.
To be fair,
though, I mean you weren't exactly.
No, I mean like, but it didn't. No, because I like I said, I was eating while I was doing it, so usually my attention's right there. But it really didn't hold my attention, and so it's like I feel like I missed a lot of it just because I was just like, I honestly thought it was a kind of boring episode,
I mean the main thing in the episode wasn't really the story; it was the. What's the word? It's the feeling you're supposed to get while watching.
The narrative, like that kind of.
No, it's just it's this visual thing that's and like this emotional thing. And I mean, Gatiss did say it was written mostly for children.
Jesus.
Okay.
Is that something you say when you think, oh, man.
Oh, no, no. I mean,
it was written for kids.
It's a Doctor Who tradition to scare the fuck out of children.
No, and there's nothing wrong with
but,
that.
And but... Mark Gatiss felt like no one has scared children in a while, like what he did. And it does have a very, like, simple children's, like story thing. Bad guy trying to destroy the human race by turning them all into...
Sleep.
Monsters.
Gross sleep powder monster, yeah. Crust monsters. And they're like they're on a space station over Neptune.
Yeah.
And so, at the end, and Clara got infected by the shit too. But yeah. You're not actually really getting infected. Okay. So there's like a twist at the end. It turns out, and the Doctor even notices it like 5 minutes before the episode ends, where he goes, "It's like a story."
Yeah.
And so the whole episode technically, all of that shit that they went through, it was like they're in a crazy version of like a spooky haunted house like walkthrough.
Yeah.
Because it was all an act. Basically the scientist guy was like a director. He was setting up this shit. But he's still nefarious because you find out that he is actually the only real sand monster. As Sandman as they called him. The Sandman that he created were just like they weren't really
they were like constructs.
Yeah. So he explains his plan at the end, was that he was creating this sort of play or this scary experience to send across the universe,
yeah,
and infect everyone with a digital signal. So it's not actually the sleep or anything. It's the video, the viral video that he's making is actually what's going to fuck over people. It's actually going to, mutate them. So it ends with
he told us not to watch.
Yeah, and he tells us don't watch it.
But it's that kind of like morbid curiosity thing.
Yeah.
So it's like,
and you know. So technically, it's not really a Doctor Who episode, because and that's why there's no intro.
Yeah. It just happened to somehow light up all the little letters to say Doctor Who.
No, but you
that
know,
was his
like,
construct, I think.
Well, no, like so. No one wins in the end because.
Well, he kind of does.
No, he doesn't. I mean, the Doctor, they just escape.
Yeah.
They escape before the thing crashes into Neptune.
You know what? That is kind of frightening to me to see the Doctor not actually trying to...
Well, it's because it's like there was nothing to win against. Yeah, because then the Doctor knew what the fuck was going on by then.
Okay.
And so this signal, it's clear it made it out.
Yeah. So we're now all sand.
So we're... People. No, we're infected, yeah. That means. But it all. But in terms of the Doctor Who universe, that means anyone who got the signal... is infected and
so
ideally we could see them all show up again because
they're Gatiss even said that he has a second episode in the works for series 10 the follow-up and he said it wouldn't be found footage.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that was a problem for a lot of people that this episode was just found footage style, but I mean that's because we were watching the video that infects people.
Yeah.
It ends with him saying that, and then it's the nightmare scene where he takes off his glasses, and then he rips out his... He just doesn't rip out his eye. Sand. He pulls out, his eye as a chunk of sand.
Yeah, and then his voice distorts.
And it's creepy.
I will say that I did find that unsettling.
And he starts falling apart.
Yeah. That was the most interesting part of the whole episode, was just doing that at the end.
That little bit of chunk left, and then it was still talking. It was creepy.
And he starts falling apart, and then the episode just... It's like a TV turning off.
Yeah.
So we didn't really watch a Doctor Who episode. We watched a viral video that's supposed to kill us.
Yeah.
That was supposed to make us make no. It doesn't. It kills us, but we don't become the sand monsters. Our eye stuff becomes the monsters, and they become a new race of people.
Okay.
Like
Don't sleep.
No. You have to sleep.
No, but you don't, because if you do, you create the eye crust.
No, thing. You have to sleep because if you use those chambers, you create more of those things. And that's in that time period.
Okay.
So that time period's fucked. We're okay.
Okay.
But essentially, and it's through the episode where it's a message more for kids saying, like, hey, go to sleep when you have to. The Doctor's essentially saying, go to bed when you have to go to bed. Like, sleep is good. I mean, yeah, it is an episode written more for children, mm-hmm. which, again, we need to remember, this is also a family show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with that. With that. No, but... Like, there have been plenty of episodes that were children-related that I enjoyed. I just, for whatever reason, something about this episode just didn't quite mesh with me.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've... This is on the heels of like a bunch of two-parters.
Yeah, I know. No, and I know.
I think that's...
I've read this episode's kind of polarizing for fans.
No,
too.
It
they're,
is.
They're not sure if they.
It's
like
very
it polar.
Well,
yeah.
And again, because it's on the heels of a bunch of two-parters.
I think I'm so used to that where I'm thinking like I could have actually maybe been okay with a
second
part.
Because we've been getting adjusted to these full stories that. Yeah.
They're fleshed out, and they have...
And the end with the cliffhanger, and, like...
The tension, and everything, yeah.
But this was more of an experimental episode, really.
Yeah, and I... Yeah. I don't know what my voice just did, but... no, yeah, and I'm glad... I like the idea of experimenting.
Yeah.
I like all of that for the filmmaking, for the show.
Yeah.
I just, like I said, it's not always going to hit, but I'm glad that they're doing them.
Yeah. It was extremely hit or miss with people. But... I guess that's sort of the point, is just to see how something like this would go down.
But that's why I said it's not found footage now. Like, the next one won't be.
Yeah.
And they probably won't.
What Gata said was, like, he says probably not, whatever that means.
But, I mean, it's likely that based on reaction, they'll think, okay, maybe we don't want to do this for a while.
Or based on reaction, they'll be like, fuck it, we're doing it found footage.
Yeah,
I personally didn't have problems with the found footage in this because it made sense to me.
It's never a matter of it making sense to me or not. Do I enjoy the way it looked or not? And
I thought it looked okay.
And in this case, I didn't really notice that it was found footage at times. I was like,
I mean, if anything, it felt more like a first person shooter at times.
I did get like a Dead Space vibe from it, to be honest.
Especially when you see the gun, like the gun show up and stuff.
Yeah,
that it clearly felt like a first person shooter.
Like the episode of the X-Files, first person shooter.
Yes. God damn it.
Jinx.
That's a good episode.
I mean, I think the main basis of this is. I wouldn't know what to say because I mean, okay, look, I like the episode. I definitely liked it.
I feel like it's polarizing for you. Like, you're split in two parts.
No, I am because I mean, well, I applaud how experimental it was, and I enjoyed the hell. What cinched it for me and made me actually like say, you know, this is pretty good. Was the ending really? I mean, without that ending, it would have just been all right. The ending, I think, the creepiness factor of it, like, and turning. I like the concept so much is basically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It turning the whole episode into this like infectious viral video is sort of what makes me maybe rate the episode a little bit higher. Without that, it wouldn't have been as solid, I think.
Yeah.
But compared to like everything else we've had, it
falls a bit short.
See, and my expectations were low based on that too.
Yeah.
So usually a lot of times when my expectations are lowered like that, I end up surprised, pleasantly surprised. So that's another reason why it's like the fact that I was just like I just felt like mad about it is probably just a bad, you know, it's just it wasn't that good to me.
I think my problem with it was the characters were like they seemed like more bland versions of the guys from like Under the Lake.
You know,
it seemed like
they were NPCs. It seemed like they were just non-player playable characters in a video game. They didn't seem like real characters. And again, I want to say that was sort of the intent because the episode, again, is...
There's only so much give.
Well,
I can do for that.
Again, it's supposed to be like a simulation, essentially.
But,
it's
that doesn't make me like it.
No, I know that. But, I didn't care about any of the side characters. The only time was...
It was when
that
with
one
the clone
scene,
with
yeah,
the guy, yeah.
When he's, like, dying and shit. And
yeah.
I was like, that's kind of sad. He's a big dummy. But... Oh yeah, and the clones are kind of they have low intelligence.
Yes, it's a far
and
cry from
he sacrificed himself.
They don't say all their words like
yeah, and he sacrificed himself for the
and that's that that was kind of interesting that weird kind of like racism towards like
clones. Yeah,
but they don't go into it much beyond that.
No,
so.
But yeah, it's not a character heavy episode.
No,
it's not.
It's
not. It didn't seem like again for me. Capaldi and Clara are they're like the the silver lining for everything. Even if the episode has not been good, and this applies more to like season 8. I didn't like a certain amount of episodes, but Clara and the Doctor were always like the. They were always like the rock, you know.
Well,
like,
I mean,
they were.
You knew what they were cooking.
Yes.
Okay.
They're the main characters. Yeah.
No, but I mean, like, but there are shows where the main characters like. Where they fall flat and it's like, no, I don't care. No, but
these are
consistent. Yeah. Like with Arrow, right? Sometimes I don't give a shit about what he's going through. Whereas with the Doctor and Clara, they're always consistently, in my opinion, I know a lot of people say, oh, I don't like the way they are. I like the way they are in, like, for the past two series. They've been actually, like, great.
Yeah.
I'd argue I like Clara more now than I did when she was with
Matt Smith. That's a lot of people. A lot of people even actually like... her more than last series too.
Yeah, I mean it's and they were good for this episode, but I'm not.
Well, I mean this episode didn't really. It's weird. It didn't feel like a Doctor Who episode.
That's correct.
Something did feel off about it. I'm not sure. For me,
that's because it wasn't really trying to tell a story. What it was just trying to do was, like...
Just scare people?
It was trying to just give you an experience. Like walking through a haunted house, like at a... Like Not Scary Farm or Halloween Horror Nights. It was essentially like that. It's like going on YouTube and watching a walkthrough. That's essentially what it was. It was like a Let's Play version of Doctor Who. Where you're... kind of getting everything, but you're not, because it's everything's from just different perspectives and different cameras. And that's why it didn't really feel like a Doctor Who episode. It felt like an experiment using Doctor Who characters. But yeah, no, I think that is the main problem. But I mean, I love the creepiness factor so much, and that ending, how just fucked up it is. Because it really, when I saw it yesterday, I was like, the fuck? I was like, that is fucked up.
That was a little surprising to watch. I know you... It's always that thing where you can show violence and horrific things happening to, like things that aren't human. Because, oh, at this point, he's not human.
But that was just...
That seemed a bit much, even for me.
Ending with dust to dust was just, like... Yeah. And then, of course, I mean, I think the important thing here, and the best thing out of all this, is children got really scared.
Yeah. Children deserve to have things.
That's the important thing? Is that children got scared?
I did read a quote a long time ago that Moffat said the important thing about Doctor Who is to scare young children.
I mean, because that's the show's tradition going back to the first Dalek episode, is that children were frightened and hid behind their sofas. And this episode, actually, when I watched the BBC stream, it even says, like, hide behind your sofas, kids. Doctor Who's coming up next.
Not the angry BBC. No,
because that's BBC America. That's
hide behind your couches, you little shits. I don't know.
Because that's happen. What that's. I always forget the actor's name. Mark A. Shepard. That's the BBC America.
Is that actually him?
Yeah, it's Mark A. Shepard.
Hide behind your sofas, children.
Otherwise He's known as Crowley from Supernatural, or
he was in Doctor Who.
The episode of Doctor Who, the Doctor in America episodes,
of course,
with Matt Smith.
But I mean, that is pretty awesome. That I mean, because. Yeah, Moffat's reign during his era, he's had a lot of scary episodes, obviously, scary imagery, but it's like typical scary imagery. This was just like, to me, another level of just fucked up. And
it's weird too, because you can't tell me like a sand person falling apart is going to be that
and
scary.
It's not even that. It's the message that the dude's saying, and essentially telling children, "Hey, you're infected, and you're going to turn into a sand monster and die." And it sort of ends with that, and so all the reports of kids like just fucking freaking out and crying to their parents is hilarious. I mean, that sounds mean.
They basically showed the kids that scene from Event Horizon.
Yeah. But I mean, an episode of Doctor Who really, really scared children. And maybe traumatized some.
Good. But for some reason, I find
good they had it coming.
It's weird because you know I've always explained my distaste for little kids running around and screaming and shit.
Yeah, you claim you were never one, but
I never was a child. That
robots don't age;
they don't. I don't know. There's always it's that weird heartwarming thing where there's not much these days that scares people, especially kids. You know, and
I wouldn't say that kids get scared.
Do they?
Yeah, it's just.
I just don't know what kids
with
watch.
With Doctor Who, the thing is, like, even if it's a scary episode, the Doctor always wins. Yeah. And it ends with the Doctor winning.
Or they're able to, like, take the thing with the whatever monster of the week they have and make it kind of like the Mummy, yeah, right? Like, they make it nice.
Well, yeah, and at the end...
Are you my mummy?
Yes.
And at God the end, it ends with, like, a nice scene between the Doctor and Clara or something, yeah, like that. Where this she... episode ends, they cut away, they leave on the TARDIS. You don't see them again. And then you see that dude, just, like, everything's falling apart. He's dying, and he's telling you you're going to die if you're going to give a final score.
Two.
Yeah, I'm in a two area,
and it only gets a two because of that last scene. If it weren't for that, I would have just given it
that
one.
Scene tied it all together to me.
It didn't tie to anything together.
I'd give it a three, probably.
Okay.
So it's kind of
it's polarizing for fans. It's polarizing for this. You don't even seem too sure
it's
about
in the
that.
It's directly in the middle for me. Like, because.
So that'd be two.
I'm
and
glad,
a half,
like I said, I'm glad. I'm glad they made it. I'm glad they're doing stuff.
Yeah, it's
like
good
that.
To
like
see
like
them
they're experimenting.
That. Yeah.
I just, for me, it didn't work.
Again, I don't know if I necessarily want a second episode for this, but I feel like maybe if it had it, I wouldn't have disliked it.
That's what makes me think that this episode is really just a breather for whatever the fuck's gonna happen next.
On TV Tropes, it's called a breather episode. It actually, because I. Every time I finish an episode, I look at their
recap.
That happens with
a lot of shows before finales or like.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll usually have like a throwaway episode to like.
Yeah, that happens all the. Yeah, that's all the time.
So I'm thinking that's the case, and they're doing it just.
So you're saying that Face the Ravens over Gamora will actually be a prologue, and that's why we had this kind of breather.
Yeah, like. It's. Gatiss was essentially given an episode, like, do whatever the fuck you want. Like, we're gonna go out with a bang, so just do what you want.
Yeah.
And he experimented, and he did this fucked up story that ends with the Doctor not winning, just running away.
Yeah.
I mean, it's close to your guys' rating. It's not the... It clearly is not the strongest episode.
Oh, yeah.
But...
Here's the thing, though. I think I've just been spoiled by this format and by these episodes. All things considered... It's certainly not one of the worst Doctor Who episodes I've ever seen.
Oh, no.
It definitely is not, and that's
it
why
just,
I'm
it,
not.
It would...
I'm just more critical
I would
right
have
now.
Given it a 4 had it been in Series 8.
Yeah, no, as bad as I might think this episode is, it's not the
worst.
It's
just compared...
I'm spoiled by it.
Compared to this series, which has been, like, pretty good. Like, this series so far has averaged, like, I would say... like
no, we've all been rating it pretty high.
Between like A minus probably. A minus to A for this whole series so far. We did think that this episode was gonna be not bad, but it might be the
we had apprehension.
This might be the only like
weak one.
Yeah. So this episode, as you can see, bit in the middle, more towards the low end of the spectrum. But would have been a strong series 8 episode. But next week we'll see what happens.
I'm actually excited for next week because I want to see
what
it leads
will
to.
Will there at least, I wonder if or there if will it at least is, be even like a next time on, like at the end where it actually gives
gonna,
you a preview.
I'm going to say no. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say that we're not going to get that. I'm going to say that it ends on a huge cliffhanger. That's
kind of like last season, series with the mistress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it's going to end on a huge cliffhanger in preparation for the two-parter.
Then they take like half a year off before doing the two-parter. They could be like jerks, like other shows do sometimes.
And then we'll get
make you angry.
We'll get a few weeks off of doing the Doctor Who stuff, and then eventually do the Christmas special. Which all right, so we'll hear you'll hear us next week, for the Face the Raven
over Gamora.
No.
Broke down to boy, abandoned creation.
I mean, I imagine he does.
Clara might know.
What? Oh, God. There's weird fan fiction about that.
Of course there is. It's the internet.